morning, everybody. So I just want to start off this morning with kind of sharing with you guys some verses that I feel like outline our heart and our mission and just why we do what we do and why we want to treat our friends outside as people that we want to bring inside and just people that we want to be friends with. So we're going to start with Deuteronomy 15, 7 through 8. And that says, if among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for what for his need, whatever it may be. So when we're looking at this verse, I think a lot of times we or I tend to view what it's talking about, our land and our possessions, our time, et cetera, those kind of things, as things that we've earned. Because many times we've worked hard for those things. That's what I was taught growing up. That's what my dad taught me. You know, you work hard, you earn good living, you take care of your family, those kind of things. And when you work hard for something, you feel like it's yours. So, you know, even a lot of times we remain dedicated in our deeds, in our prayers. We feel like all of that is a part of our work that gains us this. But this verse kind of reminds us that it's your land the Lord your God is giving you. So it's not because of all of these things that we've done that we have more money or we have food every day or we have water in our homes. And I think we a lot of times have a tendency to think that if we give too much, maybe we're struggling in ways that we won't have enough for ourselves. And I think that's just hard to remember in our own struggles, the struggles of others too. And in this verse, it highlights to lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. So we also have a tendency, I think, to decide what others need. And there's a fine line between being safe and providing someone what they actually need. So like, for example, giving someone a food gift card or making sure not to give someone access to your personal information or deciding whether or not you want to give somebody a ride somewhere. Those are kind of immediate needs. So that versus just providing for them in the moment or deciding you know what's best for them too. I think I fall into that a lot. So for example, like giving someone just an encouraging note when they're asking for help with housing or food. Yeah, encouraging notes are great, but that's not what someone necessarily needs. Or not helping someone get a cell phone because we think that they need to get a job first so that they can get that cell phone. So I think this highlights we cannot ignore the needs someone has in the moment, but at the same time, we can't only focus on the short term. So sufficient in this context would be both immediate needs, so food, clothing, housing, a shower, and then long-term needs, so resources for the next step, resource cards, that encouragement and support, a job skills training. Wouldn't that kind of be a more sufficient, kind of all-encompassing provision for our friends? So next I want to move, kind of switch gears and go to Matthew 25, 35. And this is one we hear a lot, I think, when it's referenced, like, how we should treat others, how we should help the poor. So this says, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you, or when did you see we see a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. So I think here a lot of times, at least when I hear it, I think of focusing on giving others food, clothing, drink, that part of the verse. Those are pretty self-explanatory, right? Like, somebody needs food, you help feed them. But I don't think we look at a lot of times what it means to invite the stranger in, looking after the sick, and visiting those in prison. So how can we practically do that, right? It requires a little more of a sacrifice, I think, than like buying someone a lunch. It requires meeting someone where they're at and treating them as valuable and as an equal. So not necessarily literally physically meeting someone in prison. I'm not saying we all need to go out and like go in groups to the prisons, but in our hearts, how we approach someone, meeting someone with our words, and like I said, how we approach helping them. So I don't think we can always approach people as if we know the answer. A lot of times, if you approach someone from a position of power and not as their friend, you've lost them. Because there are a lot of people in our community that have been disappointed by people in positions of power. So often that even if your intentions are good, it doesn't matter to them, right? So in addition, no one will ever want to learn from you if you're not willing to learn from them. So if you're not approaching someone with a heart of getting to know someone and getting to learn from them. So we learn so much from our guests every day. We learn about life, humanity, what it means to be a human, about resiliency, about hope and encouragement. So I want to kind of transition again. We're going to move to Deuteronomy 15, 10. And that says, you shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him. Because for this the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy and the poor in your land. So most translations of this verse have some kind of form of your or thy when it's referencing the poor, the needy. And I think that's important to focus on. It gives us a sense of ownership and community here. So the first words of that are also if among you or your brothers, kind of indicating, as we'll talk about later today, that none of us are very far from poverty or from being in similar situations. Many of the friends we've made with our team, it was, they have jobs, or they've had one medical issue, or one car accident, or one situation that turned their life in a different direction. Or they may not have a job that pays enough to pay rent, right? We all know that like housing prices are crazy right now. Rent prices are especially. Or someone just doesn't have enough to pay first and last month's rent. Maybe they have a job, but to get an apartment, right, you have to have a whole first and last month's rent, which is a lot of money. So yeah, we're all close to that situation, I think, in one way or another. So I also want to jump back to, in this portion of Deuteronomy, it says, there will never cease to be poor in the land. So when you hear that at first, isolated, out of context. I think there's a lot of times that it can be misinterpreted, right? So we might tend to think, or someone might tend to think that, well, we can't end poverty if it says this. Why should we try? Right? But taking that in context, Jesus also references this part in Matthew 26:11. So he repeats that and says, "For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me." So Jesus is not saying we shouldn't serve the poor, or he's more important than the poor, right? He could be referencing what he said kind of back in 25 that we talked about just a second ago. But he's also just referencing, this is right before crucifixion, he's referencing the fact that he would soon be crucified, and the woman here is preparing him for burial by pouring oil on him. So he was alerting the disciples to the fact that they had limited opportunities to serve him physically in person. So in contrast, they would have many opportunities left to serve the poor in the land. Not saying, don't do it, like serve me instead, but that was a way that they can continue to serve him. Here I also want to really focus on the words, give freely, your heart shall not be grudging, open wide your hand. What does that look like? It looks like the woman pouring expensive perfume over Jesus. So there's three similar accounts of this in Matthew, Mark, and John, but we're going to look at Matthew 26:6 here. So it says, while Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste? They asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. So, obviously, the perfume was not something this woman didn't want, right? It wasn't her extra. It wasn't something she didn't need. It was valuable to her. So, I think this story also illustrates what giving with your heart might look like, not always just giving practically. It references meeting the needs in front of you and not trying to fix whatever you think the root of the problem is, right? I think that's what the disciples are attempting to do when they say, well, we should sell this perfume. That would make more sense, right? We would make way more money. We could help a bunch more people. Let's fix the problem. Let's get rid of the homelessness here. That's the practical thing to do. I think Jesus realizes that simply selling this to give money to the poor wouldn't actually fix the problem, right? He has much more vast knowledge than we do, than the disciples did. So kind of when we were talking about this, Ashley mentioned to me, I think a good way to illustrate this is we must teach a man to fish and give him the fish to sustain himself in the meantime. Like, we're not trying to go at it from a point of we need to fix this problem, so we can't give someone fish because then he'll just rely on us for fish and we'll never fix it. We have to meet both needs. So what would it mean to open wide your hand? What does that mean to you? Would it mean being more generous with your finances? That's what we think of first, I think. Or would it mean overcoming your social anxiety to approach strangers or acquaintances? I think we have a lot of people here that are more anxious people in general, like meeting new people, and like, is that what that means to go up to a stranger and say, hey, tell them your name? Would it mean opening your home or your calendar? Would it mean answering the tugs on your heart when you see someone in need? Would it mean opening your mind and heart to those that have different beliefs, political, religious, otherwise? What does it mean? So Ben referenced last week kindness flowing out from Jesus and who he was. And he said, kindness means pouring out yourself to others, right? To ease someone's burden. So I've never heard kindness described in that way. Usually I think of kindness as you're being nice to somebody. That's what kindness is. Like, that's the basic definition. But in being kind, we're seeking to pour ourselves out to others as Jesus has poured out everything for us. So that's what the heart of, like, my team, several of us, like, that's what we want to do every day to our guests, to people that we meet, to others in community organizations. That's who we want to be. So we're going to kind of jump now into a little background, a little bit more about Project Refresh, what we do, how I got into that. So I'm an occupational therapist, for those of you who don't know that. When I was in OT school here, we had a professor who really focused on doing OT in the community and how that is incorporated in that. And there's a lot of OTs, more so in New England, that can work in that. There's not a lot of opportunity for that down here. So you can work on just life skills, meeting people where they are, and I knew that I wanted to use OT somehow in the community. So when I was first looking for jobs, I primarily moved back to Augusta. I'm from Savannah, but I primarily moved back to Augusta because I had those community connections, because I'd gotten to know some of the need here. I didn't know what things would look like at that point, how I would get into the community, but I knew that being in a new city, I wouldn't have any idea what that need looks like. So I felt called to serve in an unconventional way. Now, this isn't my job right now. It's kind of like a job, but I still work as an OT in hospital, but I was meeting with friends, Tracy, one of them back there, and we, other therapists in the community, we were like meeting for dinner regularly, and someone mentioned a similar organization in Texas. So there's one in Texas doing a similar thing called Moving Waters. And as soon as she said that, I knew that was kind of the answer to prayers and the answer to how can I serve my community here. And several of us were like, yes, we want to do that. Let's do that now. So it went from there. It was during COVID. We had a lot of paperwork, had to learn a lot about what it means to have a nonprofit and how do you get incorporated and all of these things. How to use a trailer. How to use a trailer hitch. So right now, I'll kind of go through the logistics of what we do. So we set up at 5 sites right now. We set up at Master's Table Soup Kitchen, Gap Ministries, Vineyard Church, Department of Public Health, and then we've just started setting up at Broad Street Ministries when they have their services. We provide guests with 15-minute showers. That's just so we can give enough showers because we have to go dump our wastewater. We give them a set of clean clothes and a hygiene kit to take with them. While they wait for their showers, we try to get to know our guests. We try to ask them about their stories to not only make them feel known, but to also connect them to resources. So rental assistance, IDs, staffing agencies, laundry services, all those things. And when we have more volunteers, that allows us kind of within our organization that know about those resources to really get to know our guest and to primarily work on that part of things to help get people connected. So before and after our showers, we ask people how they feel. They have like a 5 face scale to make it easy for everybody, like sad face to happy face, basically. And at least 95% of our guests say 5 out of 5 when they get out of the shower. They say, I feel like Superman. We had one guest say that. and he posed like Superman for a picture for us, but you know, it makes a difference. So what impact does a shower make? So what I hear most often is that it makes one feel human. We hear that word over and over again. It's shocking. It's been shocking to us, I think, how many people go 6 months without a shower. How many people go a year without a shower? I've met more than one person that's gone a year without a shower. So a lot of us, you know, before we started this organization, we were kind of aware of that because of working in hospitals or nursing homes, what it means to those people to get a shower. And even there, after going a week, I've heard several times, wow, thank you, I feel like a human. So if you think about, right now it's about to be summer out there, right? So it's about to be very hot, like 100 degrees all the time. So think about if you had to walk for miles outside in our 100 degree Augusta weather, and then you couldn't take a shower after that. People end up using hoses. They ended up using sinks in public bathrooms just to get what you can clean. We have a guest right now that she only gets a shower when she checks into the hospital or when she sees us. She's in a chair, like, and she can't get anywhere else, like, because we have a handicap accessible shower. So it means to people a lot of times being, like, it's part of human function, like being clean after incontinence. Like, imagine that, like, if you had to deal with that. We have so many guests that have medical issues. So it allows people with diabetes to keep their wounds clean to prevent amputations. Or after an amputation, to help keep that clean to prevent sepsis, like blood infections, to prevent having to go back in the hospital. So we're thankful every day, I think, we've learned. I never was thankful for my shower before. I was out there serving from like 7:30 in the morning till 1 in the 100 degree weather, not being able to shower, getting dehydrated myself. And then going back to my house and being able to shower after that, like, you're like dripping sweat. And like thinking about that when I get in the shower at home, like, wow, my guests are gonna have to leave this shower, go back out into the heat and sweat again. And then they have no other option. It also makes an impact on the ability to connect with others. So a lot of people don't want to approach someone because they assume someone won't want to talk to them because of their hygiene. Like, people are embarrassed all the time. People apologize to us, and we're like, no, please. Like, we want to be with you. We want to talk with you. So I'm going to have them show a video real quick just about one of our guests kind of talking about what it's like to be homeless and what a shower means to him. All right, so I don't know how much you guys could hear of that. We're using our resources and we're not great at videos and things. So that was Rodney, and he, you know, just says what a lot of people say, that this is the lowest point of my life, or like, I have a job. Like, I came from doing all these things, and just what it means to him, like, kind of highlighting to we're all one job or one paycheck or something away from being in a similar situation. So the purpose of our organization is to provide a sense of dignity and a sense of being known. So we want to know our guests. We seek to see people for who God made them, not for their mental disorders, not for their anger or their choices, many of which people are forced into, not for their addictions or their beliefs. So starting this organization has changed me and changed my heart towards others. I don't think I ever realized before this how much I looked on others as being other, or myself as knowing better. So there's so much to be learned about life and people if we just stop to actually listen and absorb, not just to hear or use the stories of others. So we even have to be careful in our organization to not make this about like making money for ourselves and making like our organization the champion of this. You know, we have a mentor, or we had a mentor organization in California that said, cautioned us kind of how to, that we need to be careful of how we share the stories of our guests, be careful not to make their stories an ad or a gimmick to gain support. Like, we're not any different from these people. So being a part of this organization is also maybe more confident in kind of working with the causes of the meek and the poor, right? So I used to be on edge walking downtown as a female by myself, right? I think when you don't know the difference, you don't know any better. Like, you want to keep yourself safe, right? So I felt like I had to look the other way or not engage people for safety reasons. And I'm not afraid anymore. I feel empowered to help people. I know a lot of people by name. Those that I don't, I can approach with tools and resources to try to help. So yes, there are always safety issues. I'm not saying don't be safe. It's important to recognize people that are more aggressive in their approach, as well as individuals with different mental health needs, in order to set appropriate boundaries. But I now feel equipped to love my neighbor and to speak with them as an equal more than ever before. So I don't feel that I can love my neighbor any longer by just giving them change or saying, I don't have any cash, here's my leftovers. I can love my neighbor by asking them their name and telling them my name. It can be just as simple as that. I can love my neighbor by helping them to navigate a new city and locate resources. A lot of people are transient. They don't, you know, they don't know where Salvation Army is. They don't know where Gap Ministries is. I can love my neighbor by providing them handouts with dates of events. I can love my neighbor by cleaning a shower. I can love my neighbor by seeing them, not pitying them, or their clothes, or their bags that they carry, or their lack of shoes. So that's like the point that I want to get across. Like, Ashley has a lot of resources here that she knows about. Like, different people, like Ben knows about resources, Brent knows about resources. If you ever need something or want to know like how to help someone, please like get to know what Ashley knows, what's on those resource cards. That way you can feel equipped and feel equipped to love your neighbor and to get to know them. So Ashley kind of wanted me to talk about a little bit of ways to get involved with Project Refresh. So we do have shower days, which we need volunteers for, to help run. because we all work. So we can't provide showers enough for the need that's out there. We also need physical donations, which I think she's put a list up of things for the clothing drive right now. We need financial donations to help run our organization. And then we have a 5K, 10K coming up, which is on our website, and a fun run for kids with like water balloons, water guns, all kind of stuff. And that's coming up June 22nd. So if you have questions about that, you can ask me later. But I'm going to have Ashley come back up and kind of go through just action steps about missions.
Kimberly, thank you.